Today's guest is someone who is a personal hero of mine for the role model he provides for all of us. There is no one listening who does not have individual difficulties and challenges, whatever those may be in their lives. Our guest today, Everett Kuiper, is a lifelong Racine resident who has a great legacy as an accomplished musician, as someone who worked for 25 years in a laboratory as a dental technician, and as an individual who has served in the position of church organist for Olympia Brown Church for 40 years. And he has done all of this while dealing with the issues that come with being a dwarf, also known as a little person. Everett is a fascinating man, as you will soon hear, and we'll be talking about the difficulties, struggles, and rewards of being a little person in a world of what dwarves called NSPs, normal-sized people. We are so honored to have you with us in our studio today, Everett, and we thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
When I asked Everett if his life as a little person was something that he wanted to talk about, he answered yes immediately. And I think that we talked on the phone, didn't we, for about a half an hour?
Yes, he did.
And we started with where I'd like to start for our listeners, Everett, is with your birth and your childhood. Could you tell our listeners a little about your family, and if are there other dwarves in your family, and how did you have siblings who were dwarves?
Right. I am the only little person in my family. I have an older brother who's normal-sized person and three younger sisters that are also normal-sized people. And my parents are. So it was a kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a fluke, but it just happened that I appeared as an LP. And so my life with my family has been nothing but beautiful, and they've always treated me almost as a normal-sized person, except when I needed assistance, they were there, especially my father and my mother. And I was happy to be in that family because of who they were and how they treated me and the love that they had.
And you said something really interesting on the phone about how if you needed some special help, like you needed to reach something high, rather than them just kind of
quickly
you tell
doing
the story,
that, right,
yeah,
right.
For
no,
you.
Yes. They would wait to see what I could do about it first. Perhaps get a stick and catch it if I was trying to get something off the shelf. Some things were a little dangerous, so they didn't let that happen. But in other words, the effort that I made was first and foremost with them, and then if they had come to my rescue, they did.
It just sounds like amazingly strong parents, and
yes,
that must have helped you with self-reliance as you went along.
Absolutely, but I, of course, didn't know that as a child.
Right.
But yes. I can testify to that for my 75 years of living, yes.
Did your parents know that you were going to be a dwarf? I know that they didn't have all those tests that they have now. And
right.
Also, when did they find
they
out?
They knew I was different because, first of all, let me explain some of the attributes of dwarf. We have a larger head than normal. For the size body, we have four shortened arms. My elbow to my shoulder is not as long as a normal sized person, and it also is not. I can't lay it flat. It's cocked, you might say, and so I'm always in a position where my elbows. Well, it's hard to explain on the radio, but anyway,
they're kind of twisted a little bit.
A little twisted, yes, mm-hmm. And so I have that, and then of course my legs are foreshortened. I have a normal sized body. If I would sit next to Linda, I could talk right to her face because my body structure is the same. It's the limbs that are different.
Mm-hmm. And that's different than midgets in what way?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we dwarfs like to be called dwarfs because that's what we are. The condition is called achondroplasia. And so I'm an achondroplasian dwarf. I am not a midget, and we don't like to be called that because we're being confused with what a midget is. And a midget is a perfectly proportioned little person.
Okay.
Tom Thumb was an example of midgetry, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to keep those two categories separate. So we are known as dwarfs, and midgets are
proportioned.
Well proportioned, yes.
And there is a surgery now, and I think you have some regrets about that. You're fantastic for our listeners. He's just a fantastic musician and played very young for churches, even at 11 years of
yes,
age.
Yes, right.
But I know that you wish that surgery.
Yeah, there's a surgery for my arms, for my elbows that I explained earlier, that they straighten them out, and so this would be very advantageous for reaching on the keyboard. But, you know, parents don't always investigate those things,
right,
or are really maybe afraid of them because of their
vulnerabilities.
Yeah,
yes.
right. And so they're very protective, and they're hesitant.
Yes.
And so the surgery was never done, and I do not fault him for that.
No. I was absolutely terrified. Our older daughter, after her freshman year of high school, she had surgery on her back, and it was very treacherous surgery. There are deaths associated with it, and I just remember being so scared and being like, do we really have to do this? And in her case, actually, we really had to do it.
Yes.
And, you know, she's grown up to be a just lovely girl. She's an MD. I was terrified, so
yes,
I understand.
Yes.
And I
understand that there's also a lot of rehabilitation and a lot of pain involved, and maybe my parents knew that. I do not know, but
yep,
it was not a priority on them.
Just for our listeners, Everett, how tall are you?
I was 4'7",
mm-hmm,
and because now of my age, everybody shrinks, and so now I'm 4'1". I say to myself, I can't afford to lose any more inches. But things are getting a little more difficult because of those few inches that have been taken away from me. But yes, I'm 4'1".
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about your elementary school years, and that would be something that as a parent I'd be so scared to send a dwarf child to
yes,
a regular
yes,
elementary school, fearing
right,
what you would face.
Right.
How was that?
Well, the elementary wasn't bad because I went to a parochial school, and it's called the Racine Christian School, and it was the students were the same people that I saw in church, so everybody knew each other, and so they were used to me. It was when I got to high school that I had a bit of a problem. I remember being in my mother's car. She's going to drop my brother and I off at school. My brother had been there 2 years already, and I wouldn't get out of the car. I just absolutely refused to get out
mm-hmm,
of the car. And so she was conflicted. She didn't know what to do. And my brother, he just took my hand and held my hand, and I slowly got out of the car, and I made it to the door, and it wasn't 3 or 4 hours later that I didn't want to go home because everybody was so accepting
mm-hmm,
and so interested and curious. And I have an outgoing personality, so
yes,
that helped.
Mm-hmm.
And my high school years were glorious. I loved Racine Lutheran High School.
Mm. Isn't that something? Because, you know, today we hear so much about bullying, and there's always been bullying.
Yes.
And if anyone's different,
yes,
that those are the people who are targeted. And it's really nice to know that that's...
I have never even in the world of the public, I've never been bullied. I've never... never said bad things to. Mm-hmm. I've been laughed at, but I've never been bullied.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever at any time as a child or an adult, I have to tell our listeners that Everett said he's an outgoing person, but Everett is also, he's just so personable. You really want to sit down and talk to you.
Thank
say
you.
To Everett. So you have the kind of personality that people really are drawn to, and I think
yes.
that's very helpful.
And but it's worked to my advantage, obviously, because if I was shy and withdrawn,
mm-hmm.
I would add to my difficulties, I think.
And that is a credit to your parents and your siblings.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But I started to say, did you ever have a time as a child or as an adult where you were bitter or angry or just terribly sad about having been born a little person?
Many, many times.
Okay.
Not too many times when I was a little child, say from 7 to 15. I didn't really know the difference. I was having too much fun. But later on, I don't like to talk about this, but I will. I often would want to run away and join the circus.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what dwarfs did. They didn't do any other thing. I don't know of any other occupation that they did. They went to the circus
mm-hmm.
and entertained people by being a dwarf.
Yeah.
And a clown dwarf or whatever. And so I would say that to my parents. I said, I want to go away and join the circus. And that was really, they didn't hear it that way, but it was really a desperation move on my part. And they, of course, thought, well, he shouldn't do that. I mean, that. Why is he feeling that way? We have done everything we can for him. But anyway, I just had mm-hmm. those kind of thoughts
mm-hmm.
Often.
And you know, women identify with that my age because there weren't many occupations we were able to do either. You
right.
could be a teacher, though,
exactly.
and you could be a nurse, and you could be a secretary. But
yeah.
you know, I know that for women who wanted to go to medical school. Really hard law school, any mm-hmm. of those kinds of fields, or even mm-hmm. a firefighter, police
right.
officer. There's a
well,
whole lot that was closed to
right.
us. Too.
And that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I would be an example of that, but that has changed many, many ways. And I can refer to an orthopedic surgeon of renown, Dr. Ain, A-I-N, in John Hopkins University. Who is has fashioned all his needs, and still is a very effective surgeon, doing the things he knows how to do, and pursuing an education and helping people with
yep.
with the same situation he is in.
And he's an orthopedic surgeon at Johns Hopkins
yes.
University. It is amazing. I think once we have faced discrimination in a stronger way, a whole lot of things have changed
mm-hmm.
to hopefully a big extent, but to some extent, too. How was college?
What happened, I again went to a parochial college, and I was so well-adjusted by then that I didn't.
Okay, you didn't.
I had no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody had a problem with me, I never knew it because
mm-hmm.
I was just having too much fun.
Yep.
Yep. And then I transferred to a conservatory in my junior year, and I commuted from Racine to Chicago 3 days a week to the conservatory on the North Shore. Railway, which we, as you know, we no longer have.
Yep. And you know, we talked about there's an organization, LPA, Little People of America. How did that organization begin and kind of what's its philosophy and purpose?
Okay, it began with a fellow named Billy Barty. He was a typical dwarf clown in the circus, and he felt that he wanted something better for other people. He was fine for himself, but he wanted something better for other people. So he started an organization called LPA, Little People of America, and it grew and grew and grew. So today it is a very active and very proactive advocacy for little people, and all the medical things that are available. They have a beautiful website that is available, and they have a convention every year. And the convention was in Milwaukee at one time, and I went to the convention, and just a little anecdote here. I didn't know what to expect, and I walked into the room. I got off the elevator, and there were maybe 100 dwarves that looked just like me. And I got off the elevator, and no one looked at me. I'm not used to that. I'm used to people staring. Mm-hmm. And I was not even noticed. No one cared. I was just one of them.
Wow.
And it was wonderful, and it was offsetting, too. I was used to being... I guess I liked the stares after a while. I don't know. The staring and the questioning looks.
Because you said generally when you go to a place somewhere, everyone kind of looks at you.
Yeah, yeah. But no one looked at me.
No. And it's just, that's just an advantage of LPA if they did nothing else. Because there aren't a lot of dwarves, and I was interested in that. Because in Racine, you said
I only know of two of them.
Okay.
I do not know two of them, but I only know of two of them.
Uh-huh.
I've seen the young lady and the young man, and we look at each other, and for some odd reason, mm-hmm. we don't talk. We don't communicate. I think that people expect that we would know each other, but you're just another person to me.
Right. You told me something, too, that you'd like to say about parents when their children will point and say, hey, there's a dwarf, or hey, there's a midget, misconstruing you as a midget.
Yeah.
What kind of experiences have you had with that?
Well, very good ones and really very bad ones. Mostly pretty much this is the situation. The little child will see me and say, hey, Mommy, look at that little guy. And Mommy will say, now, some people are made small and some people are made regular like you, and he is one of the small people, and that's usually enough for the child to be satisfied with. But then I also have experience where the mother will get mad at the child, so mad sometimes that the mother will, and I've not seen this with fathers, but the mother will reprimand the child by lightly slapping them, and the child will wonder, why has Mommy hit me?
Mm-hmm.
And I will wonder the same thing. And I think it's out of probably embarrassment or out of she wants the child to be polite. But the child is just curious. The child says that about a lot of things. Look at this, look at that. And it's just plain curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I would say to the parents in that case that just let them be curious, answer their questions. I would love to be introduced to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a conversation going that really is helpful. And that's the third category that I would put my experiences in, that people, I talk to the child and they find out that I'm a person inside there, and we have fun, and the parent is happy and I'm happy, and the child is extremely happy.
Uh-huh. Are you asked to go to schools and talk to children about being a
I have
a
been.
Person?
I unfortunately have refused those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that everybody has things in
right.
their life that they regret, but that's one of them. I think I could have been a good advocate for.
But actually, Everett, you are, I mean, you are a role model for all of us. I really believe that you're a role model because we're wounded, deeply wounded people in lots of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when people see you able to overcome such a big issue in your life, it makes all of us feel we should too.
Yeah.
We should be able to do that too.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. You also have, and you asked me to talk about this, and but you have another thing that you had to face difficulties with, and that's being a gay man.
Yes.
When did you know you were gay?
When I was 6.
Okay.
I knew I was, now let me just say I knew I was different. I knew I was looking at things differently than other kids my age. And when I was 12, I really knew I still was very different. I didn't change. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I was just different. My likes and tastes were different than other people, other men or boys. so I think really the realization came when I was about 20, and I thought, I have a different orientation than the other men.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do about that, except I liked it. I liked it, but I didn't know what to do about it as a dwarf gay person. And then when I was about 30 is when I went to that first convention, and they had a little
group of
people that would meet as gay dwarfs. And I went to that meeting, and there were 4 of us there. Now, this convention, there were 2,000 people in the convention, and there were only 4 gay people, 2 of them that were quite old. I was 30 about that time, and 2 of us. And I had some food, and I left. It was nothing remarkable. There was no talking or anything like that. But I also found out that this little group and all gay dwarfs, and I don't know how many there are, but I imagine 10%, as Kinsey said,
mm-hmm.
were discriminated against by the organization of LPA because they didn't think that was a good thing. So there's a
Everett
really
and I, Everett and I were talking about this.
Yes.
The real strangeness of them working against not discriminating against little
yes,
people and
yes.
then not really being accepting of
right,
these.
Right, gay little people. Right.
We're kind of in good times though.
Yep.
Things are getting better.
Yep.
We have mutual friends who were able to marry
yep.
as gay men the last
yes.
month, and so things probably
are really
improving.
Moving on.
Yep.
Right. Right.
Do you want to tell our listeners what for you have been the greatest challenges of being a dwarf, and are there rewards?
The great challenge is just being a dwarf in a normal sized person's world. And being in that kind of minority, and then being kind of the only one that you know too,
mm-hmm.
Except if you would go to these conventions regularly, you could probably establish some friendships. But I lived my life quite alone, as far as being the only dwarf I knew. But challenges are I think obvious. The reaching challenges, the challenges of being accepted by strangers, which sometimes can be hurtful. The challenges of being I really don't know how to say this, but the challenges of being different in a family that is not different, and feeling sometimes responsible for their kindness to me,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't really seem right, but sometimes
that makes sense. Though.
It
when
makes
everyone
sense
has
to me,
help
yes.
you, do you always
yeah,
want
right,
to be helped?
Right.
You know.
And then the final challenge is that, unfortunately, with all dwarfs, and I emphasize the word all, when we get older, we start having bone and back trouble.
Yes.
Seriously, and there aren't any dwarfs in my experience of having read about them, and my experience of going to these two conventions, their fate is my fate. I now walk with a walker, and I can walk with a cane, and I foresee the day, and it's probably not too far now, of being in a wheelchair all the time. And this is going to happen to every one of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we see that we get older and things start happening slowly.
Yes.
And in
yes.
your 60s, you have some
yeah,
things happening.
Right.
And then in your 70s, it gets more.
Yeah.
But I hope you understand the extent to which you've really made a difference for a lot of people by the way you live your life.
Well,
it's amazing.
I thank you for that.
Boy, this time went so fast. Helen Keller once said, "You never know the difference you make in the lives of others when you overcome your own challenges, whatever those challenges might be." I'd like to thank our guest and hero today, Everett Kuiper, for making a difference in the lives of others by demonstrating through your own example as a little person how much can be accomplished when you embrace your strengths over your challenges. For your example and your work and for being with us today, we thank you, Everett.
Thank you again for having me.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing your time with us this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshensky, and we hope that you go online at WGTD.org to hear this and other of our Heroes programs, and that you will tune in to WGTD HD on the 4th and 5th Saturdays of the month at 10 a.m. for more editions of Heroes in Our Midst. We salute the hero in all of you. Take care.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconcert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, I'm John Nicholson. Welcome to Education Matters. Today, our guest is Scott Miatek. He is a dual language teacher at Mitchell Elementary School. Scott, thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So we're going to talk about the bilingual experience in Racine Unified in generalities, and then we will talk about the program that's happening here at Mitchell Elementary School, and then we'll talk about the follow-up program that you have just started involving parental involvement.
Okay.
So just so our audience knows. Also, if you hear a little background noise, I'm recording this in Scott's classroom at Mitchell Elementary, which we celebrate as being a new school after last year's fire experience. Well, Scott, as we begin this, please tell us about yourself. I'd like to know something about your personal background, your education.